Hello, witches. This is Kara Kovacs, and this is Business Witch. As a third-generation witch, at least, and a business and life coach for mission-driven entrepreneurs and leaders, I teach you how to make money and magic as liberatory practices. Because when we know, seek, and embrace our full potential, we create a better world for everyone. Here you'll find tools, conversations, spells, and inspiration that take you from waiting to creating so you can build the business and life you're oh so worthy and capable of having. Let's go. Hello, Bewitchers. Before we get into today's content, I just wanted to thank you for listening and let you know that if you want to support a small business owner, the best way to do that is to share about their work. In this case, I deeply appreciate your 5-star reviews on your preferred streaming platforms, resharing episodes like this one to your social media stories. I promise to reshare. Or if you feel so called to stay connected, I give free love notes with lots of business tips, advice, prompts, free classes, access to insider information on my email list every single week. You can head to www.karakovacs.com to subscribe. You'll get a curated list of our favorite episodes of this show, as well as access to lots of classes, a library of past free workshops, and tons of information to support you in your own small business journeys. So thanks so much in advance for hanging out with us on all the places, Instagram, email, and here at the podcast. Let's get into the show. Hello, beautiful witches, and welcome back to another episode of Business Witch. Today is the final episode in a 4-part series that I wanted to teach kind of like a masterclass. So my hope is, even if this is the first one that you're listening to, you can go back and listen to the first three. The last couple of episodes have just been free value for you that make you feel like, oh, I learned something. I'm going to take that and I'm going to apply it to my business and it's going to help me do business in a way that feels more personally aligned for my values, expansive, renewed. You know, my goal and my mission is to help ethical service providers make more money and use that money to make the world a better place. And so my hope is that this episode is an expansion of that. If you missed the first three, you can go back and you can listen to a systems audit masterclass for your business. There's an episode on how to make a profit without social media. And then the last one from last week is how to create a profitable one-on-one offer. This week, we are talking about intersectional feminist money mindset, my favorite thing to coach on. I fucking love coaching on money. This is going to be fun. And if you like this episode, you heard it here first. In April, if you're listening to this in the present of 2024, we're going to be launching an ethical sales incubator. So I'm essentially going to be teaching my sales framework, which I'll share a little bit today about how I cultivated that. And even the link to join hasn't dropped yet. So you're going to want to make sure that you're on my email list at karakovacs.com. You can subscribe if you're not subscribed already, because the first thing we'll do as soon as it goes live is send you an email with all of the information to join. And it is going to be really fun. We're going to hang out for 3 days together, and I'm going to teach you exactly how I sell, which I just finished last week. We had the retreat for my mastermind, which is a small group coaching program that I run twice a year, the next iteration of which will launch sometime later this year. But I got this really beautiful reflection from one of my clients that the way in which she would describe how I sell is honest. And my hope is that this episode, or any time that you engage with my work, that that's what you feel like, that my sales methodology is tell people the truth and then help connect them to their own truth so that they can make an informed decision. And it's not more complicated than that. It's simple, but it isn't easy, right? Like, it requires a critical examination of your own personal truth, the somatic experience of what it feels like in your body to say yes to something. And that can be complicated for people depending on their unique set of experiences, which ultimately is really what this episode is about. So I just want to note that intersectionality, or the term intersectional, is a term that was coined by Black feminist educator Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989 is a word that is really important to the Black feminist movement. The reason that I want to bring it into the context of this particular episode is that the absence of an intersectional perspective makes it really hard and also wildly problematic to try to coach on money. So you really need that framework or that lens to be able to holistically hold the sometimes contradictory experiences that make up all of our very vast and varied experiences of money and of wealth. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about that intersectional perspective and how that impacts your personal money mindset and your business money mindset. I want to give a shout out to a couple of episodes that I think really support this episode's content. And, you know, there may be a little bit of overlap in terms of some of the content that we go over today. But if you go back to the summer of 2023, there was an episode we did on how money isn't energy. I'll talk about that today, but I think that that episode is a really good accompaniment to this one. And then there is also an episode from December of 2023 called How to Coach on Objections Like a Human Being and Not a Dirtbag, which you might want to listen to as well. And again, all of these episodes are really designed to help you expand your capacity to sell in a way that aligns with your values. So to share a little bit about my own journey and cultivating what I think is a unique sales framework to me, and it was sort of designed in the process of uncovering what didn't resonate, essentially. So I don't know what certification you did or how you felt about the business module in your certification. I did an incredibly comprehensive certification. We did hours upon hours, like dozens and dozens of hours of practice sessions. There was a trauma-informed component. Like, there were so many practices. It was a 650-hour program. But the actual business portion of that program was only a week long. And the way in which they taught us to sell was in these 20-minute sales calls, which when I was first starting out gave me such extreme anxiety. Because I was like, how am I supposed to convince, which I want to flag the word convince, but somebody that I don't even know that they should pay me several thousand dollars in a 20-minute conversation, which at this point in my career, I could probably convert or enroll a client, whatever word again that you want to use, like through the DMs without even having a conversation. But it's because I've built such confidence in the value of the service that I provide. So when you're starting out, if your sales process is fraught with your own insecurity about validity of the results or the service that you're selling, like how well it actually works, that is really going to impact the feeling that you have when you get on a sales call. And if what you're feeling in your body is nervous and untrusting, how are you going to create a trusting and grounded space for a potential client? Now, I still sometimes get nervous before I get on sales calls. Sometimes I read an application. I'm like, oh, I love this person. I really want to work with them. And I have, you know, nervous jitters. But our job is to ground ourselves so that we can show up and create a safe space, as safe as possible, for our people to come in and for us to be able to serve them powerfully, right? And so one thing I just want to offer you to take with you is how you feel when you enter into the space is setting the tone for how the other person feels when they enter into the sales call, right? So your work might be in regulating your nervous system first. And doing 20-minute sales calls in the beginning of my career, oh my God, was anxious AF. That was not a secure space for me to be welcoming a client into. So I started to invest in business coaching education. And there was just a lot of languaging around like moving through my money mindset blocks and increasing my rates in order to increase my profit. And for me personally, like I did get into this line of work. I started my own business because I want to make a lot of money, but I didn't resonate with passing the raise that I wanted to give myself as a cost increase of services onto my clients. Like, I want a raise, you pay me more money. That's the best way for me to give myself a raise, right? Just that language didn't resonate for me. There was so much language around like, if you don't do this, you're not going to be able to do Y, which felt really predatory. A lot of the selling techniques, the way in which we were supposed to guide people to like paying us in full or paying us at all, like it just felt so icky in my body. And I interpreted that icky feeling as if I must just not be experienced enough yet, which in all fairness, there were ways in which that was true. Like I was gaining experience. I was new. I was nervous because it was a new thing and I hadn't done it before. But there was also this fundamental feeling of being out of alignment with my own values that I thought was a mindset block that I needed to move past. And so much of the way that I teach selling was rooted in, I thought this was a mindset block, but now I'm critically interrogating this system, which was built inside of a white supremacist construct. The coaching industry was created in the 90s before we had a lot of the language that we have now for intersectionality, for example, again, didn't exist before 1989, certainly wasn't a part of the earliest conversations in the coaching industry, which was largely created by white men in an effort to optimize productivity or optimize performance, right? And so in our own experiences as coaches, but also as people where we're actively working to dismantle or deconstruct these conditioned things that make us think like life is supposed to look a certain way, business is supposed to look a certain way, the way that you heal from money stuff is supposed to look a certain way. When you feel inside of your physical body, something about this doesn't resonate for me. Instead of making yourself wrong, which is what I did and I see my clients do, like, can you actually explore that? Can you get to the root of why? And maybe it's that you're just nervous, valuable insight, something you can work through. And maybe it's that there is an inconsistency of value alignment, which means that there's an opportunity to build a new way, which I think is so cool and is going to come up again and again and again in our lives, the lives of our clients, the industry at large, and our world as we continue to create more inclusive language, as we continue to educate ourselves more and more about social movements. And so bringing that perspective into our sales process and also into our money mindset work is necessary, like not even just valuable, but frankly necessary. And so I was like, I'm going to build a sales model that is rooted in being honest with people. That's my sales framework now, is being as honest as possible. And talking about that with clients in a way that constantly acknowledges that it can be really uncomfortable to be honest, that it can be really vulnerable to be honest, checking in with people and seeing like, is it okay to even go deeper than where we currently are? And again, I'm gonna teach all of this in the Ethical Sales Incubator. So I digress from the money mindset stuff, but I think that they're so related because I don't know about you, but I would be willing to bet that for the vast majority of you, the most uncomfortable part of your sales process is the part where you have to talk about money. Am I right or am I right? And also, I would be willing to bet that for the majority of you, the most uncomfortable or scary things that have come up in your business have been about your own financial security or making that first investment or that big investment to scale or to create a thriving business, right? Businesses have overhead. If you're like, I can't invest in my business, I don't know how you think you're gonna create a business. But this is where we bring that intersectional perspective in, right? I remember Rachel Cargill was the originator of this post, and I've seen it in different iterations over time, but she posted, did you manifest it or was it white privilege? And I think when it comes to like making that first business investment, did you manifest it or was it white privilege? Did you manifest it or was it generational wealth? Did you manifest it or do you have a partner who could float your home expenses whereas somebody else has to have two side hustles so the building of their business is going to go more slowly than yours, right? When we have that intersectional perspective, we're able to critically think about how there are just privileges inherent that make it easier for one person to build a business than it is for somebody else. And so much of how people teach about and talk about coaching just completely leaves that out of the conversation. It's like, you must not really want it enough if you don't invest in it. And it's like, no, some people want it really, 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 really bad, but they don't have good credit history like you do because they didn't have generational wealth and parents to help them pay for college. So they had to take out loans and went into a little bit of credit card debt. And it's not as easy for them to put their credit card down for the certification or the coaching container as it was for you, right? And those circumstances are two very different conversations that you're having with a client when you're on a sales call about what their availability is to invest. And when you make it their like lack of commitment and not the literal reality of their financial experience, in some cases, you're re-traumatizing people. And in other cases, I mean, you're just really honestly being a jerk because you're saying you're creating a completely unequal playing field, which The world in and of itself is already an unequal playing field because of systems of oppression, because of the intersections of identity. And so when we incorporate this perspective into the way in which we approach money mindset in our businesses, we have so much more potential for healing. So I want to talk about, and again, you can go back and listen to the Money is an Energy episode because I don't want to completely re-record that episode for you right now, but I think it's a really important part of the way that I personally teach money, an important point to make if you haven't already listened to that episode that's going to support you in the direction that we're going to take from here. So I always like to bring up A Happy Pocket Full of Money by David Jocondi, which is a book about the quantum physics of money that is very dense and complicated, but also very much worth the read. But he talks about how 98% of money doesn't even exist in the physical reality. So that 2% that does exist in the physical reality, that's going to be your bills, your coins, your bars of gold. That other 98% is money on a screen. So you log into your bank account and you see, you know, you have X amount of dollars in credit card debt, X amount of dollars liquidity in your actual cash flow. That money does not exist in the physical reality. It's just like in your bank account. We've all collectively agreed that we believe that that is a real thing. But ultimately, it is made up. It's real in the implications that it makes about our lives living, you know, in capitalism. But it is not a tangible thing. And this is fundamentally why I do not believe that money is energy. And if we think about if money was energy, where has money been attracted as energetically drawn to in the last 500 years? White supremacist colonizers. And I think that the belief that money is energy for my people in particular, my people have this fear or this block that if they become a steward of money or a steward of wealth, if they become a wealthy person, that they will somehow become an asshole, which is also funny to me. I invite you to challenge that. Like, if you believe that money has the power to change you that much, how much power are you giving money and how much security do you have in your own values system and your own integrity and your own moral compass? But that conflation comes from really if we think that money is energy and energy has always been attracted to people who we have a complete value misalignment with. It makes sense that we would not want to attract money in some subconscious part of us for fear that we would become the thing that we morally oppose. Again, this is giving money way too much power. When money is a theoretical concept that is made up, the energy that we are talking about is actually the energy that you have inside of yourself. And I love teaching healing money as a somatic experience, as a self-awareness of, oh, when I imagine myself becoming wealthier, I imagine myself becoming an asshole, and there feels like an internal conflict, all of that is happening inside of you, right? And so we can explore that in a coaching environment and really start to take that apart and acknowledge like where those beliefs come from. And you already have everything that you need inside of yourself to heal and transform that without needing to engage with some imaginary outside energy that, again, doesn't even really exist because money is not an energy. It's an inanimate construct of a thing that has some physical representations but or reflections, but like ultimately isn't real, right? And so all of that somatic experience around how you feel about money that is so unique to you, we get to really get to the heart of that. And if you can transform that within yourself, you will see your financial narrative change. You will see, again, this is all your mindset. It's not money somehow being more magically attracted to you because you started to engage with it as a practice and now it wants to come closer. You know, giving money this power like it's some kind of deity that you can worship and then it will come in for you. It's like, no, you are the energy source. You are the one in control of the narrative. And the same is true in your business. So if you fundamentally believe that what you have is valuable, that people need it, it becomes much easier to sell it. It becomes much easier to create an offer that you're excited to share with people. If your starting point is the belief that you don't know if you can do this and you don't know if what you have is valuable, that's how you're going to market it and it's going to impact who comes in. It's not that you're drawing people's energy to you. It's that you're creating the energy that I think of it like a lighthouse that sends the light out so that people can start to see the light and they can come. And the same is true with money. If you believe that having it is going to make you a bad person, you're going to try to keep it as far away from you as possible, even if your conscious mind is like, dang, I would really love some more money. Now, the energy that I do think is real, and again, I talk about this in that money is an energy episode, is the energy of abundance. And I teach this in classes all the time, but I think it is such a great reminder that you are already abundant. Hello, friend, that I don't know who you are. I don't know where you're listening to this episode, but I just invite you to really take a moment and think about a space in your life where you are already abundant. Maybe it is in community. You know, maybe you have just such incredible friends who make you feel so loved and seen and witnessed. Maybe last night you ate an incredible dinner that was full of nutrient-rich food and made you feel so nourished. Maybe you live in an incredibly beautiful place and you go outside and you see the abundance of beauty in the natural environment around you. My love, you are already abundant. You know somatically in your body what it feels like to be resourced. What would it look like to create that energy around money in your body? Again, you have everything that you need to go on that healing journey. And this is where we bring it back to intersectionality. What that journey is going to look like based on your unique intersecting identities is going to require space holding that is able to see all parts of that without rejecting or shaming any single part of it as some kind of mindset block for you to get over. So if you come from a family where wealth has meant something extremely negative, versus where if you came from a family where wealth was viewed as a tool or a kind of power, but that left a stigma for you, right? Like every time we talk to a client or we look at our own stuff, we all have, whether we come from a background where we were financially well-resourced or not, we all have money shit. Your ability to transform it is going to be dictated by your experience of trauma, by your experience of what larger society has said about you and money or somebody like you and money, right? So we really, really, really want to hold that for people. And that's why when I get on sales calls, I think this is a direct quote from somebody said this to me. I can't remember if it was a client or in a large group program, but somebody said to me once, like, I don't think it's my business to actually get into somebody's pocket with them. To which I responded and I said, if you're not actually having an awareness of what's going on, what are you guys even talking about? Now, if I'm coaching somebody on an enrollment call, I'm not going to like ask them to log into their bank account with me, but I'm also not going to have a half-assed conversation where I don't really go all the way in on what is true for them because I don't want to seem nosy, right? It's not about being nosy. It's about being real. So when you coach someone, you're talking to them about the most intimate, true details of their lives. If you're unwilling to get real with somebody about their finances, you're probably not having the most powerful conversation that you could have. This is, again, where I shout out the How to Coach on Objections Like a Human Being and Not a Dirtbag episode. I'm not doing any of that because that is really vulnerable without the consent of the person that I am talking to. So if I'm going to have a conversation like that on an enrollment call, likely what I'm going to say is something along the lines of, we're at the part of the conversation where we're talking about money. We've just done a really like powerful coaching experience. I'm setting the stage for you. This is not a direct quote yet. And then you get to the part where you pitch them and you bring up the pricing and you can feel the energy shift, right? I like to, and this is not a right or wrong way to do this, but I like to pre-qualify people to know how much the investment is going to be before I even get on a call with them, because there is like no point, honestly, in having a conversation with someone about cost. In my opinion, like at the stage of the game that I'm in, if somebody's coming onto a call and they're in the headspace of thinking they have no idea what the investment is going to be, we're at the part of the conversation where we are talking about the financial investment. I just want to name that for most people, this is the more vulnerable and more uncomfortable part of the conversation. And I also just want to acknowledge that talking about money can be really dysregulating for people. So I'm going to hold that in the space. And if I have your consent, I'd love to talk to you about what this investment would mean for you and really help you unpack your own thoughts and feelings about whether or not this is right for you. This is not about me convincing you that your stories about money are wrong or not true. And, you know, usually I just ask for consent, but I'm expanding here to give you more context and more inspiration for how you might go about a conversation similarly. I'll reiterate, right? Like, my job is to connect you to what your truth is. So in order to do that, talking about the money can be really helpful for people. Would you like to go there with me? Say something along the lines of that. And again, I'm going to expand on this in the Ethical Sales Incubator, but just to give you a start, because it's like, some people are saying that they can't afford it. And that is a truth. It's a fundamental truth that if they purchased coaching with you, they would not be able to meet their basic needs. That's why personally, and I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way here, and I will teach a framework for this in the incubator, but personally, I like to have the dollar amount on my application so that if I'm getting on a call with somebody, I'm not like dropping a bomb on them of how much the cost is. I think that that compounds the shock factor of talking about the investment so much more when people come in, they've had an incredible experience getting coached by you, and then they get to the end of the call and they're like, holy shit, I wasn't expecting it to be that amount. And you completely sidestep that and save yourself from getting on a bunch of calls that you really don't have time to be doing if you just front load what the investment is. However, if you're new to business and you have a relatively like less expensive offer, it might be worth it for you to just get on as many calls as possible and have the practice of coaching people on the dollar amount. So you might not want to put your investment on. That's what I'm saying. There's not like a right or wrong there. But just for me personally, I like people coming into that conversation having self-elected that they already know how much it costs. And so when I ask for consent after the fact, if I receive a yes, if I receive a no, you're probably ending the call, right? Like, okay, thank you so much. Have a great day. Assuming that I receive a yes, the next thing I say is something along the lines of, okay, well, thank you for your consent. You can withhold consent at any time. You can be like, actually, I don't want to go here anymore, and we will stop. But I'd love to ask you, you know, usually people who have financial hesitation about making this investment fall into one of two camps. The first is that there is a factual reality. The reality of their life at this time is that they literally cannot afford this. If they purchase this service, they will be unable to pay their rent or pay for their basic needs. If you fall into camp one, I would never want to sell anything to you until your financial circumstances changed. And my hope is that they do, right? End of conversation. If you fall into camp two is maybe you've never made an investment like this before, or you'd have to put it on a credit card, or you'd have to rearrange some of the expenses that you have in your life. Like, you'd have to really strategically think about the impact that this investment would have on your personal finances, but you could figure out how to do it. And you're more just having feeling inside of yourself about whether or not now is the right time to do it, or whether or not I'm the right person to do it with, or whether or not it feels like a fuck yes for you to embark on this service. Which camp do you fall into? And if they say the second camp, then you get to go into the somatics of their experience, right? What does it feel like in your body when you think about making this investment? What does it feel like in your body when you think about the cost amount? What does it feel like in your body when you think about what this will mean for you and the responsibility that you'll be taking on to get the most out of making this investment? You can really help somebody, like you can actually coach them on the truth of what's going on instead of some metaphor you've made up, some judgment you've made up in your mind. Well, they seem like somebody who has money, or they seem like somebody who's young, so they probably can't afford it. And then you're coaching them based on your judgments, which like isn't entirely ethical in the first place, even though you might think you're doing them a service because the judgment that you've made is like they can't afford it. So you think you're being nice, but actually you're just coaching them on your own judgments, not ethical, not nice, not good, right? We want to be a space that is absent of judgment. We want to be a space that is open for the client to uncover their own truth. And in order to do that, we need to hold space for whatever their unique experience is, which we could never possibly know unless they told us. So why are you judging them, right? So there's a whole universe that gets opened up when you ask for consent, and then you ask them to self-select where they fall, and then you focus on how they feel instead of what they should do, and they get to make a decision then that you can trust. Because if their feeling in their body is, I'm nervous, but I want this, then you can trust their yes. And if their feeling in their body is, I'm nervous and this is like not it for me right now, for you to try to coach someone past their no is a violation of their consent. It's not more complicated than this. As I said, I think at the beginning of this episode, it is not easy. It's hard. It's a complicated thing to learn how to do and to practice, but it is simple. It's trusting people, asking for consent, and staying with what's real and staying with what's true. And honestly, I find this to be some of the most fun, exciting, expansive, and powerful things that we can do in our work because we're really getting into people's truths. We're really helping guide people to their own self-knowing. That's what's so beautiful about this industry. I just want to close out this episode in how to get to that space for yourself. One, I think it's incredibly valuable to have a guide, right? To have somebody who can get you there. But two, I think that you can do a lot of this self-inquiry by reflecting on some of the prompts that we've talked about in this episode. Like, what does your yes feel like in your body? What does your no feel like in your body? What does your yes, but I'm incredibly nervous and this is a growth edge feel like in your body? What does it feel like to be acting out of alignment with your values versus learning something new that you've never tried before? Use your body as a compass. What does it feel like to feel open to abundance? What does it feel like when you think about who you'll be if you have access to more financial liquidity and resources? Close your eyes and imagine those circumstances and notice what your body tells you. It's giving you a lot to work with already. So with that, I'm going to close out our Intersectional Feminist Money Mindset episode. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If it resonated for you, give it a share. Slide into my DMs. Let me know what you want to see in the incubator. I'm still planning the content, and all of the invites and the links for that, again, will drop on Instagram and in my email list within the next couple of weeks. I can't wait to see you inside, and I hope that this episode served you. Bye for now.